I'm just doing this because no one else will.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 2, Episode 13, Duet for One. And now here are your two hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Dave.
Shall we talk about, tease our next Again With This before we get into this episode?
Absolutely. Again With This, Lucky 13, dropping July 10th. Let's watch Heather Locklear in Boston Legal, Season 2, Episode 1, The Black Widow. She is the titular, Black Widow. This is available on Hulu. So if you would like to watch along, it is a lot. There are auxiliary, Again With This, stars in it. Also, everyone's in it. I think we're in it at some point as background actors. Anyway, Boston Legal, Season 2, Episode 1. It's on Hulu, and that episode of Again With This will be dropping July 10th.
Yes, so if you want to get in on that, go to patreon.com/againwiththis to become a supporter of that podcast. It's also on iTunes and Amazon, other places, if you are not a Hulu subscriber but want to check this shit out. It's really a lot. I had no idea when I started watching it how rich a document it actually is.
Just what not to do in video editing alone. So,
I mean,
yeah,
there and truly there are, I'm going to estimate, 7,000 speaking roles in this episode. There's so many characters in this thing. It's
and
like
there's a Sarah and there's a Tara.
It's true.
Did I know this before picking it? No, I didn't. Anyway, I hope that you will all join us on Patreon so that you can listen to this because it's going to be a lot.
Yeah. For now, let us talk about Season 2, Episode 13 of Melrose Place, Duet for One, starting with our C plot. Matt reluctantly co-parents Nikki while her mom is in Mother Russia. There's really not much to this. Dr. Russia races through the halls of the hospital to find Matt. Apparently, her mother just collapsed in Russia. Where else? No one knows what's wrong. Dr. Russia booked a flight back, but she needs to be able to move about the country freely, which means not bringing Nikki with her. So can Nikki stay with Matt? And please go to the visual aids to see the face Matt makes at this, because he is every childless person when someone asks them to babysit. It's like, oh, fuck, I know I can't say no, but I really want to.
Yeah, he just goes 1,000 miles away searching for some reason that can't happen while verping. It's amazing.
It's really something. He asks how long. Finally, Dr. Russia doesn't know. So he snaps back into being a decent person and hugs her and says, of course, Nikki can stay with him. And then it's some number of days later. Dr. Russia is in a skirt suit with her hair done up fancier than it was for their wedding to take a 5 million hour flight to Russia. Like, it's too much. I realize people were not in sweats in these days, but come on, lady.
And this franchise really does not understand. Like, the writers remember when you got on a TWA 747 and there was like a top floor with a bar. And you dressed like you were on a ship. It's like, why? What's her name? Erica, after she was relieved of her sex work duties, was shipped off to London unaccompanied in a Hillary Clinton dress suit. Like, why?
Yeah.
That flight is 10 hours. Okay, whatever.
I mean, at least Erica maybe was flying first, but even so, like, yeah, all the more reason to dress comfortable like all the other rich swells are. Come on. But anyway.
Yeah.
Matt's putting her in a cab, obviously, to the airport. He grabs her hand first and promises her that he's okay with this. She shouldn't worry about anything. And she gives Nikki a last minute manners briefing, which is cute. And Nikki hugs her and promises to take care of Matt. And the cab pulls away. They both look very beleaguered. And that's it for that. Bye-bye. Good luck to everybody.
Yeah, I mean, at least we were, for now, spared any stuff, but Jesus.
Yeah. Moving on to our B plot. Jake gets a side gig as a snitch, plus a new roommate. So Allison gets back from San Francisco to find the untidy mess Billy left her in the living room when he scarpered. Nothing at all in his bedroom except the bare mattress and one hanger just to make his asinine point. Like, I moved out, see? Like, come on, dude. Whatever. So dumb. Anyway, she checks her messages to find out Amanda called her home number to give her the green light to sleep in and take the later flight back instead of calling the hotel in San Francisco to tell her that, which is a gorgeously passive-aggressive mood. Billy also didn't delete a message from Jake arranging when they were going to move Billy's shit into Jake's place, so now Allison knows where he went, as though there were many options. Of course, there were not. So she stomps around the pool to Jake's, where Billy opens the door, stone-faced. And Allison commences whining that she figured he would realize he was being a baby once he calmed down, so he has to remind her that, you know, he called and heard her and Steve on the phone. And she claims she tried to call him and explain when Steve showed up, even though he wasn't supposed to, but Billy's not interested. Steve has one objective, which is fucking her. I'm paraphrasing. She actually tries to deny it despite all clear evidence to the contrary, and Billy's like, whatever. And then she pulls out like a Mont Blanc pen with a bow on it, but no box, which is very sus. Like, did you find this somewhere on the ground at the airport? Like,
yeah.
What? Billy thinks it's a guilt gift, which clearly it is, but she says it's a good luck gift for his new assignment. But Nancy had a holiday epiphany and killed it. LOL. Clip two.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you would have known if you'd been around.
I give up, Billy. If you don't trust me, there is nothing I can or want to say.
Then I guess we're at a stalemate.
I guess so.
Also, I know it's just Billy, but he gave you his heart and you gave him a pen. Come on.
I mean, never
get anyone a pen for any reason, unless it's one of those that has a little chamber in it where when you turn it, someone's clothes come off.
Sure.
And that someone needs to be Jake, just so we're clear.
the person getting their clothes come off, not the person receiving the pen.
Yes. Correct. I mean, both, if you want. I don't know your life.
At least Billy is a writer. Like, I get it, but that's like a gift from your mom, not a gift from your girlfriend.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she leaves and takes the pen back, and he does this hilarious ending of scene take where he's like, well, I really did want it. Anyway, you can see that in the visual aids too, because I made a gift. Where he's like disappointed. Anyway, at the office, Amanda congratulates Allison on her success in San Francisco, which all happened off screen, by the way. Allison, distracted, asks about some outside meeting. Apparently, Mayer Technologies heard about MicroComp, and they asked for Allison, but Amanda told them that she was out of town. Just as well, since we don't know how Allison's ideas go over with clients who don't want to bone her. And then Amanda brightly turns to Allison's personal life in clip three.
So how was your Thanksgiving? Just wonderful, Amanda. As I'm sure you know, Billy moved out. Well, can you blame him? I mean, flirting with a client? Everybody around here has been watching you play Dance of the Spider-Woman since the moment you first met Steve. You know, Amanda, if I didn't know better, I'd say you're setting me up to Steve's ranch in the first place was all part of a master plan to break up my relationship. Get a grip, Allison. You are not the center of the universe.
Get that tattooed on your face, Allison.
Yeah, she does a hilarious take at this, like, what, I'm not? Since when? Anyway, yeah, more people need to say it, honestly. Mm. Call Jane, have her say it again. At Jake's the next day, we get a reminder that Allison and Billy are going to have to end up together because no one else will have their entitled asses. Clip four.
There's nothing to eat in here.
Your hand's broken. You can't go buy some food.
Better yet, there's the door. You're not happy. Use it. What's your problem?
My problem is, all my life I try to be a stand-up guy and I keep getting dealt hands I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy.
So, Jake is referring to his situation with the feds, of course, but it's funny to pretend it's about Billy's inability to stop by Ralph's on the way home and buy a box of fucking cereal. Anyway.
Jesus.
Jake moves on to giving Billy the broad strokes of Palmer's legal issues, which he can't tell Amanda about and for which he expects her to blame Jake when they all blow up. Billy says that Amanda is stronger than Jake thinks, but Jake thinks the less she cares about him now, the easier everything will be later. So Jake and Amanda run into each other some number of days later. She accuses him of trying to avoid her, guessing that Billy said something to him about her. Not sure what she thinks he would have said, but anyway, she misses Jake and invites him over that night. When we see them next, he's on her couch. She has lit candles and ordered pizza. Smart. Why waste the effort?
Atta girl.
Yep. He repeats that he missed her. And then, clip 5.
I want you to know that no matter what happens, I really care about you.
What are you talking about?
My girl.
Yep.
And then he gave her a pen. Just kidding. I found this by the pool. I don't know.
So Jake badly covers that Amanda's just important to him and he wants her to know that. And she's like, yeah, yeah, save the sentimental shit. Let's fuck. And he's like, okay. Again, paraphrasing. Allison is heading out to work the next day when she runs into Billy coming in to get more of his stuff, assuming that she would be gone. The good news is that her outfit is less shit than usual. It's like a black dress with white polka dots, sort of a faux wrap situation that would honestly still work today. Good job. I'm impressed. Yep. You know, stop clock, etc. The bad news is their fighting is as dumb and tiresome as always. Clip 6.
So, is that Steve's state-of-the-art computer?
Yes.
Oh, that's pretty impressive. Ought to make a lot of money.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, I guess I better go do what I came to do.
Billy?
Yeah?
I've been doing a lot of thinking about us, about this whole situation.
Yeah, me too.
And if you move anything more of yours out of here, then this really is over, and I'm going to start dating Steve.
So if I didn't move my stuff out, then it wouldn't be over and you wouldn't date Steve? But just because it wouldn't be the right thing to do.
I didn't say that.
You didn't have to, Allison. Look, I don't need ultimatums to read between the lines. This is what you've wanted all along. Hey, I can't compete. All right? I don't own a $50 million computer company.
You are misinterpreting this. This is about principle.
Principle? That guys with fat wallets can buy any woman they want?
No!
Billy hurling her computer against the wall. I mean, that's a Jake move. What the hell?
Yeah. In the visual aids, you will find a very felicitous screen grab of her shrieking no. Her mouth is open so far. It's amazing.
I mean, that's what I would do if someone threw my computer against the wall. I would be upset.
I would also be more concerned that he was lifting it with one hand and not using his legs, because it was 1993. The thing was massive.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
like a brick. Oh, God. They're so dumb. Oh, and not for nothing. What is she thinking by being like, before you go get that last lonely, I am a hanger, swinging, swinging. Just so you know, if you grab that, I'm going to start fucking Steve for real. Like, how did you think that was going to go?
Right. Like,
did you think he was going to be like, oh, okay, and then move all his stuff back in? Like, I just don't understand what the play was.
Yeah, I'm with you. He's been very clear. Like, as far as he is concerned, they did break up. Should he have given her an ultimatum? No, but he did stick to it and he moved out. Like, I don't know what else she thinks is going to happen. Like, traditionally, when people have been living together and then they stop living together, they don't continue to date. So I don't.
Yeah. This is like Kelly being like, I don't understand why we can't just keep going out. And he's
right.
like, because you chose yourself, ass. But this just strikes me as like very TV writerly. Like, we have to have her say this so that they can explicitly get in the fight. And it's
right.
like, but they've already had this fight.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, boo.
It's also a little bit conceited of her to just be like, oh, well, I'm going to go to my backup, as we
yeah.
will find out, spoiler, in the next episode. Anyway, that's it for the B plot. On to our A-plot. While Sydney starts sex work orientation, Jane becomes Michael's part-time nurse. A groggy Jane wakes up to a call from a peevish Michael complaining that she's dodging his calls and not visiting him enough at the hospital. When Robert sits up beside her in bed, she reports on the call, and Robert also thinks that Jane should go see Michael. And because he says so, she'll go that afternoon. Okay. Upstairs, Amanda stops by Sydney's place and judgmentally eyes her up and down when Sydney answers the door in her robe. Sydney tells her to save her judgment, and Amanda is like, clip 7.
I come from the school of don't try to teach a pig to sing. It only frustrates you and angers the pig.
I would like to note here that my brother, for his independent study project when he was a senior in high school, made an album, because duh, that's what he does. And the lead track was a song about this very expression, which our dad uses all the time.
Aw.
So whenever I hear it, I'm unable to like hear it without singing it. Don't try to teach a pig to sing. It's like this very bluesy number. If anyone really cares, I do have a clip somewhere, so I can follow up. But yeah, that just made me laugh that it was like such a dadly expression for her to use.
It's really
cute. Amanda.
Amanda is not there to use folksy expressions. She is, in fact, there for the rent, which is due, and warns Sydney that she shouldn't fuck around because Amanda doesn't need an excuse to kick her out, given how unpopular she is around the complex. Sydney promises to deliver the rent by the end of the day and goes inside, calls Lauren, tells her she's ready to go to work. And when she does this, she passes by the tiniest little tiny baby TV I think I've ever seen. I don't know why I want it, but I do. Like, it's smaller than my phone, the screen on this thing, but it is so cute. It's like,
it really is cute. Sometime it looks like after, a teeny. Sorry, go ahead.
Sometime after Dave and I got married, we used to go to the toy store a lot because at that time the Star Wars action figures reissues had just come out, and so we were there a lot. And Dave was recollecting them. And one of the times we went, we were like walking up and down the other aisles, and I was like, oh my God, an easy bake oven. I always wanted one of these. I'm going to get one. And Dave was like, you have an oven. You can't buy an easy bake oven.
That's not the point.
I didn't have a big Luke Skywalker at home I could play with. I had to get the little one. Wish I had that money now.
Sorry to impugn you, Dave. That TV reminds me of when you see, like, in Atomic Cafe or whatever, like, old mid-century footage of a UNIVAC computer that takes up a whole room. Yeah. And there's always a teeny little, like, video screen on it.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are you looking at?
Right.
Do you look at the tubes on there? I don't understand what this is for.
Yeah, truly this TV is like, I mean, I have small hands and the screen on this thing is probably the size of the palm of my hand. And if I saw it at an antique store, I would probably buy it because it's super cute. Just to like have as decoration, not to actually watch anything on it. Anyways, you can see in the visual aids. At the Beverly Hilton, or so the establishing B-roll would have us believe, once we go inside, I think it is the Bellage, Sydney rides down the escalator in a not remotely daytime appropriate sheer black number to meet her date, whose name is Ken. He got them a room, doesn't want to waste any time, and Sydney pretends she's all about it. And when they get to the room, Ken holds aggressive eye contact with Sydney while he's getting undressed in a way, I don't know how else to describe this, but music video acting. Like, it's so over the top.
Yeah, that's perfect.
As first Johns go, he seems fairly gentle and, you know, boyfriend experience-y, but Sydney still looks like she's trying to dissociate from what is happening. Over to the hospital, Michael is just tired of a magazine when a pissy Jane walks into his room and asks what he wants. And since, as far as he knows, Kimberly is dead, or at least that he's never going to see her again, he starts right in making overtures to his safety school. Clip 8.
I've been thinking the last 3 days about everything I've ever said and done in my life. Hold it, please. I keep reliving the accident, trying to figure out what it is I'm supposed to learn, you know? What, big lesson. Well, I don't have all the answers. I just know that few things work out the way you want them to. and you survive something like this, though, you come away changed. Grateful, but mostly regretful. I want to start fresh, please. I need your forgiveness, Jane. I don't know, I gotta start somewhere, and you've always meant so much to me.
You are a piece of work, Michael. I saw the engagement ring.
Yeah, so I asked him to marry me.
At least you're honest.
Listen, Jane, when I was with you, I thought love was something you owned. You know, something you had to hold tight with both hands, because if you let go even for a second, you'd lose it. I was afraid. I made mistakes.
Do you want forgiveness, Michael? You have it. I have to go.
Okay. So then she goes around the corner and she like swoons like a soap opera star, which she is, so fine.
Which she is, yeah.
Wow. Oh, Michael. I mean, I guess he had a lot of time to work on that speech, and it seems to have worked, so good job.
Yeah, but it should not have worked on her. Like, the problem wasn't that he was possessive and controlling.
Yeah.
The problem was that he wasn't, and he fucked someone else.
Yeah.
And he fucked your sister.
Yeah.
And he drove drunk. Not that she knows that, but...
True. So true. Speaking of that sister, over to the hotel. Sex has been had. Sydney's trying to make conversation because she still doesn't get that date is a euphemism. Clip 9.
I can't believe you need to pay someone for sex.
I don't think something's worth having unless I'm paying a lot of money for it.
What do you do?
Let's just say I'm a captain of industry who takes long lunch hours. Lauren's got quite a find. I'm going to be asking for you again. But don't ever ask me any questions. I ask the questions.
Okay. This one time I'm going to let you ask me about my business, Kay. Okay. She really, this is one of those scenes in which Laura Layton is like, she makes Sydney so heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
Because, this person is just so needy and, like, clueless in her neediness sometimes that you're like, really? I can't believe that you need to pay for sex. Like, maybe don't make him change his mind about doing so. That's the job.
Right. Yeah. Ugh. So he tells her she was great and leaves. And when he's gone, Sydney drops a robe, turns on the shower, and does a classic sit in the stream and slide down the wall sobbing, which, you know... Mm. You've seen it before, you'll see it again, but it's a classic for a reason. And that night, a very grave Matt comes into Michael's room to say that Mrs. Shaw called the hospital earlier. Kimberly has, in fact, died. Officially, I guess. That's the cover story. Instead of expressing the human emotion known as sadness, Michael says he should sue that bitch, meaning her mother, of course, for negligence, since he feels bringing Kimberly back to Cleveland is what killed her and not... You know, all the drunk driving he did first. But then his next thought is, what have I done? And Matt is like, I've asked myself the same question. And Michael doesn't know what he means, but because it's a soap opera, this is just to establish for new viewers that Matt, you know, changed Michael's blood alcohol level on his record and regrets it now. And it gets worse. Clip 10.
You selfish bastard. I just lost the woman I love, and all you can think about is yourself.
Actually, Michael, I've spent the entire day on the phone trying to find a bed in a rehab hospital so you don't wind up out in the street.
Gee, Matt. Thanks for doing your job. Now get out of here before I have someone throw you out.
Fine. See you tomorrow.
No, see
Grow
you never.
A spine.
You don't have to come back. Fuck him. Jeez.
No. Also, why are you doing, like, there's no other social worker in the hospital? Like, I get it.
Yeah. It's,
you know, the only restaurant in Los Angeles, but Jesus.
Yeah. So the next day, Doormat goes to Jane's house to tell her that Michael's ready to leave the hospital, so could she go to the place where Michael moved after he left her and shacked up with a side piece to get some of his clothes and take them to this rehab place? Not sure why he would ask her when Sydney would be dying to take on this assignment, but okay. And I guess it's a doormat contest because Jane agrees to do it. And on their way into Glenview, the rehab hospital, Michael gives Matt a half-assed apology, which he probably immediately wants to rescind when he sees that Matt expects him to share a ward with a bunch of other guys. Hey, man, you want to go to a private joint? Pay for it yourself. Michael acts like this is Matt's way of punishing him, but Matt says they can only cite Glenview for bad decorating, and it's only until Westlake has a bed for him in a month, maybe 2 weeks. Matt impresses upon Michael that the system doesn't care that Michael's a doctor and offers to help him into bed, but Michael wants to sit in his wheelchair / self-pity. So then Sydney goes by Lauren's, where the madam herself is having breakfast by the pool and a bunch of other sexy ladies are splashing around. Clip 11.
I hear wonderful things about you.
Oh, yeah?
To a successful maiden voyage. So to speak.
She also has an enormous, like, Elaine Bennis poof going. She's the best. I love her.
And that maiden, that so to speak, after that line, like, it's such a corny line, but she makes it work.
She does.
It's very funny. She gives Sydney a beeper, which officially means that Sydney is officially in the stable. Sydney hands over the cash and Lauren gives her her take, which is 60%. Sydney looks disappointed, so Lauren offers to pay her in Coke instead. Sydney says the money is fine. Lauren then hands off her credit card so that Sydney can buy herself some new clothes. Please hurry up, or anything she wants. Really? Lauren knows she'll pay Lauren back. And then Jane shows up at Glenview with a couple of bags of Michael's clothes and looks dismayed by his crowded ward as well. But she finds his bed and starts to unpack his bags when he rolls in and says it's nice to see her doing chores for him again, basically. And she smiles back because I guess she likes it too. God, Jane, please get therapy. Ugh. Michael mildly bitches about Matt briefly before Jane changes the subject to Kimberly and expresses her condolences. And Michael makes kind of a what are you going to do face at this and just says, yeah. Jane's almost done, so Michael starts pre-complaining about being left alone in this dump for months. And then launches into further complaints about waiting for meds and a Band-Aid, and Jane says this, clip 12.
I am so sorry all this is happening to you.
So infuriating!
What? Like, no and no. Don't be sorry, and it's not happening to him, he did it to himself. And
yes.
Grow a spine, please.
Yeah, so... And as bad as that is, it goes on from there, clip 13.
I wish there was someplace else I could go. I was even thinking of asking if I could move back in with you.
Oh, Michael, you know that's out of the question.
No, I know. After all the pain I've caused you, I don't even deserve this visit. Damn it, nurse! I'm in pain here! Nurse!
Why don't I go get her?
Could you do that? Oh, Jane, that would be great.
I'll be right back.
Thanks, Jane.
And then he pastes a mustache on his face and twirls it. It's amazing. Who is having more fun than Thomas Calabro on this show? No one.
Truly, no person. Sydney returns from a shopping spree that night, a member of the Rhythm Nation. I don't know how else to put it. She's in a black leather coat that goes down to like mid-thigh with brass buttons down both sides. It's, you know, I mean, you can picture it. I said Rhythm Nation and you got a visual, I'm sure. She's loaded down with bags and hands Amanda 2 months' rent in cash. She then demands that Amanda fix a leak in her place and to let in the guys that are delivering some chairs she just bought. Jane comes in behind her, weirdly walking like she's pregnant, which you can see in the visual aids because I was so confused by it, I made a GIF. Jane also asks about Sydney's shopping spree and whether Sydney hit up their parents to pay for all of this. And Sydney snits at Amanda that Jane is one to talk when she's taking Michael's blood money. Jane then tries to get Amanda on her side and Amanda's like, bye. And then Jane bluntly announces the news about Kimberly and even more bluntly warns Sydney not to try to use this development to try to start sniffing around Michael again. And that night, Jane has a nightmare of Michael languishing at Glenview with no one to take care of him, unable to reach his chair, falling on the floor, screaming her name. And Michael's nightmare inception worked because Jane goes back to Glenview to see him the next day. She feels bad. and has decided he can move in with her until a bed opens up at Westlake. She intends to set boundaries for them to protect her relationship with Robert. And he pretends that if he can't make her happy, he's glad she found someone who can. She'll come back the next day to get him and move him in. And he's so grateful, so she makes sure to say she would do it to anyone from the complex. And he promises she won't regret it, even as we all know she will, and so does she, probably. And then Sydney's reading a magazine by the pool when Joe comes down with a book, pointedly grabs a chair and pulls it away from Sydney, sitting with her back to her, which is a little much. Like, what did Sydney ever do to Joe? Anyway, Sydney still tries to start a friendly conversation because she is, as Sarah said, so needy and so lonely, but Joe coldly rebuffs her. Sydney thinks it must be so cool to be an artist. How did Joe get into that? Joe thinks Sydney has a job, but she says she cut back her hours at Shooters because she started getting all these modeling jobs, which is a bad fake job to pick given that Joe is a photographer. Joe is, of course, dubious, but doesn't get into it. Sydney adds that she's making so much money she doesn't know she should be a waitress anymore at all and will probably quit soon. So then Joe asks who did her portfolio, and sounding a lot like the Sophie she will be on 90210 in a few years, Sydney says she doesn't even need one. And Joe, giving her more rope, says she's lucky, and Sydney's like, word of mouth. And Joe says if Sydney ever does need a photographer, she should let Joe know, which is notably not the same as saying, I will shoot it for you. But anyway, just then Sydney's chairs show up. And later that night, Joe comes to Sydney's, but not to see the new chairs or hear more about her interior design plans. Clip 14.
I think I'm going to go with the Southwestern theme. I don't know, maybe put one of those dead animal skulls on the wall. I don't know, though. If I wake up in the middle of the night and see it, I might freak myself out.
Sydney, I know that you lied to me this afternoon. I don't know what you're into, if it's drugs, crime.
You've definitely been inhaling too many of those darkroom chemicals.
You've been spending money like it's water. And you can't be making a slinging blue plate specials. And you're not making it for modeling.
Like you know.
I know the LA marketplace. I know how hard it is, even if you have a great portfolio. Call it my New York instinct.
Yeah, well, you know what you can do with your instinct?
Don't play tough with me. I know how hard this town can be. I think you're in something over your head. Talk to me. Maybe I can help.
Look, I gotta be someplace.
Uh-huh.
That was a beeper, in case anyone thought that was her microwave going off with her popcorn for the children who are listening. That's what a beeper sounds like.
Yeah. You'll see in the visual aids that the Southwestern chair that she has selected is like the 90s-est in furniture.
Yeah.
With the possible exception of the Papasan chairs that everyone had and no one sat in because they suck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is an interesting choice by the writers to try to like reshuffle the board to make these two friendly or put them on the same team. It like on paper, it doesn't really work, but the actors sell it. So,
yeah, I mean, it also makes sense that they would be the only two that would be home in the middle of the day, maybe. Like that part of it makes sense too. So
yeah,
anyway, Sydney tells Joe she's gonna be fine and knows what she's doing and kicks Joe out, and Joe goes but tells Sydney on her way out that she's on her side. And elsewhere, Jane and Robert are having dinner at the bistro, very 70s b-roll establishing where they are, and talking about their days. Jane says she went to see Michael at the rehab place and then has to explain all about her new roomie. And at first, Robert thinks she's kidding and then is instantly furious. And Jane protests that Michael just lost his fiance and his job and can't walk. And Robert shoots back that Michael is a snake, which Jane says she knows. Compassion is one thing, but this is practically self-destructive. Great point, Robert, but Jane feels she has to do it. Robert will try to support her, but can't promise he'll be around when Michael is there, which, like, fair. And Jane understands. And Sydney shows up for her next date in skinny pants and another brass button intensive jacket. She really went on a theme, and I respect it, I guess.
Yeah, it's just a very weird It's very weird decision making for, like, I know she's new, but nothing about either of these outfits says sex worker.
No.
On TV or otherwise. It's weird.
I mean, pants, for just for starters, seem very impractical. Yeah.
No.
Anyway. No. So this guy's name is Roger. He's already getting undressed when she arrives. He tosses down the cash, saying she doesn't need to count it, and orders her to take her clothes off. And visibly nervous, she does. And while he watches her looking extremely not into it, he opens a briefcase and unloads handcuffs, a wee little flail, and a crop. And she says Lauren didn't tell her anything about this. And he says Lauren doesn't say much, which is what makes her so popular, and takes down Sydney's bustier straps. But Sydney puts them back up, saying she doesn't like his toys. And Roger grabs her by the upper arms, classic, and says he likes them and he's paying. She says she's leaving, and he threatens that Lauren won't like it. But Sydney dares him to call and tell her all about it. Oh, Sydney. And because she doesn't know shit about shit, she's chirping around her next shooter's lunch shift, refilling salt shakers when Lauren comes in. Sydney returns her credit card and maybe is not going to be a good girlfriend experience deliverer because she is not remotely attuned to the emotions that Lauren is silently broadcasting toward her, specifically disdain lightly resting on simmering fury. And after Sydney has chattered herself out, Lauren is like, you don't walk out on Roger Langdon because he gets handcuffs out, dummy. Clip 15.
Lauren, the guy.
I know all about the guy. So he wanted to play games. You want safe establishment? Join the bridge club, get a job at the bank. But don't you ever put me or my livelihood behind the eight ball.
Lauren, I'm sorry.
Sorry cost me, Sydney. You ever do that again, and I'll see to it myself, that whatever Roger Langdon might have done to you would be a walk in the park. You won't even be able to form the words, I'm sorry. You couldn't write them on your magic slate. Do I need to draw you a diagram?
No. I think I got it.
I really wouldn't want to have to resort to that. It's not what I'm about, Sydney. And it's really so distasteful.
Another bravura speech from Christian Alfonso.
I love her in this role, but I think Lauren is wrong. I think that's fucked up. Like, there was a way to play this that she told Sydney that he's into games, and it being Sydney, she thought it meant like naked Parcheesi or something. And then she's like, riding crop, what? But like this way, like that's not okay. That's just not okay for the madam to be like, to throw you in there without telling you that that's what he likes, which she knew that he did. So I don't know.
I guess, I don't know. I think if I'm Lauren, I see your point. Like, you're right that Sydney's appeal has been that she's sort of naive and dopey. I mean, I feel like if this were happening now, you could not be a sex worker in 2020 and not expect that some of your Johns are going to show up and want to do this stuff. But in 92, this would be much more outre, or 93.
Right. Well, and also, like, especially if she's new, I feel like you have to be like, he likes to do this. He's not really going to hurt you. He pays extra for it.
Right.
Can you hang?
Right. Yeah. All right, fair. But it is also important.
Which is why we have to decriminalize sex work, so that these sorts of standards can be upheld.
100%. Sex work is work.
I laugh, but I'm serious.
No, I agree. I agree 100% too. Sex work is work. And we support sex workers. She puts a little vial of Coke in Sydney's hand and tells her it'll make her feel better. And Sydney has a lot to think about. I mean, she's really expanded her mind a great deal in this scene, for sure. Jane wheels Michael into the courtyard and leaves him there while she goes to move the car. And Sydney comes down just then and is shocked to see him there. He tries to duck her, but she wants to comfort him about Kimberly and also brag about her new modeling career. And then Jane returns, which is when Michael announces that he is moving in with Jane, and we hear this, clip 16.
I don't believe this. When was all this decided?
Yesterday.
I'm a little tired from the ride. Can we go inside now?
Sure.
See ya.
Look, my schedule's been really busy lately, but I'll try and fit in a visit really soon. Don't try too hard.
Oh. Poor Sydney.
When was this decided? Oh, Sid. Like, my notes say, oh, Sid, like 5 times for this episode. Poor kid.
Make other friends. I mean,
yeah.
Not at Shooters, I guess. That didn't work out either, really.
Yeah.
So, inside the apartment, Michael needs Jane's help to get into the fold-out bed. A nurse showed her how, but of course, he makes it weird by throwing an arm around her neck like he's going to try and kiss her, and she gets flustered and dumps him down, moving back over to his bag. So then he groans really loud and claims he needs painkillers for his back. She brings him a glass of water, and he shakily takes a pill, and then when she's gone, he smugly settles back because everything's going perfectly to plan. Michael Mancini wins again! Other than the paralysis, but that's probably just temporary. Michael Mancini wins again. Shall we name our episode MVP?
There's a bunch. I'm going to go with an honorable mention to Lauren, so to speak, was really good. Yeah. I'm going to go with Amanda for Don't Try to Teach a Pig to Sing. And also that Jake's like, I just want you to know. You really mean a lot to me. She's like, whatever, take your pants off. And passive-aggressive Allison in Fine Style. So, yeah, Amanda.
Yeah, I can't disagree. She's pretty great. She's pretty great in this episode. Like, yeah. Top to bottom, it's just all great scenes, including the one where both of the Andrews sisters try to get her on their side, and she's like, fuck both of you,
yeah,
goodbye.
She's like, I don't need this shit, bye. Yeah.
Yeah, so I agree, Amanda. Okay, least valuable player. Jane, outdoor-matting Matt, impressive.
Huh. Yeah, that's fair. I'm still going to go with Matt, though. Because also his hair is getting unacceptably floppy again, and between that and the doormatting, it's bad.
Agree.
Next time on Again With This, the bizarre Mancini love triangle stabs Michael in the pelvis, the bizarre Woodward Khan triangle sends Palmer to the big house and Jake to the doghouse, and the bizarre Billison ugh triangle exists. So does Visine, and you'd better have some on board before you peep our visual aids for this episode and every other episode of Again With This. They're on our website at againwiththispodcast.com, which is where you can also pre-order a very special Beverly Hills 90210 book. Not a bit. You can follow us on Twitter at AWT90210, and you can join our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. Any level of support gets you extra content. I am Angry Pig, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Airborne Laptop, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is the center of our little universe. He's David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
I am so sorry all this is happening to you.